is City on the Hill, Matthew 5:13-16. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. A nursery school teacher was driving a station wagon full of kids home one day when a fire truck zoomed past. Sitting in the front seat of the truck was a Dalmatian. The children started discussing the dog's duties. They use him to keep crowds back, said one child. No, said another. He's just there for good luck. No, the third child said, they use the dog to find the fire hydrants. I guess that just goes to my silliness of the day. I'm going to start off by explaining the scripture. A city on a hill. The use of the word salt and the use of the word light and the use of the word hill has to be defined symbolically. So what I say is the salt, or what I believe the scripture means and what I think what Jesus is trying to tell us, salt is the spirit of ideas or an idea. The light is what permeates out from your idea. The hill is what pictured as what you believe. A hill and a mountain. You ramp up an idea, it becomes a hill, and then it becomes a mountain. So we live on top of and then you place a town on top of it, or you have life on top of it, and you give it light. So every one of us has ideas that we accept. We have a hill of a thought, and then we live on top of that hill, and we give light to that idea, life and light to that idea through our eyes and our life and the way we express. So we can see this as an individual expression of how we live and what we accept and what we believe. But there's times in which I've said that we have to throw out ideas, the salt that is no longer salty no more. You have to throw that idea out and tread under it. And one of the early ideas that I came up with to give that example is that we once thought the world was flat, now we see it as round. So the idea that the earth is flat is no longer a viable way of looking at the earth and the galaxy, so we throw that idea out, or we tread it under, or it becomes history under layers and layers of dirt in which we walk on. We have had many times throughout history where different ideas were no longer viable, and we threw them out. And I've always said that sometimes even today, there's a lot of ideas within the church that we need to throw out and tread under. I'll get to that a little bit more. There are approximately about 14,000 uses of salt. It's used for seasoning, preserving, disinfectant, and there's a ceremonial uses of salt. If you take salt out of your food, it gets pretty bland really quick. And so I've always I've used the idea that ideas take on a flavor, that Jesus taught, what he taught was an ingredient that was to add into our life, a saltiness that added into our life. And this is another example of that idea. It's an ingredient that we take into our life. We want to take on what Jesus said, live it, and show it, through and add it to our hill of a thought, and we want to give life to that thought. There was, in the Old Testament, it's been used for a covenant of salt. Grain offerings were always, they said, what I read was they had the salt and to grain offerings and a lot of meat offerings was added salt. I can't give you an actual reason why they added salt, I don't know that. The Aztecs, many different cultures use salt for very different reasons, and the Aztecs had a goddess of salt. I'm not going to try to pronounce it. It's a big, long word, and I can't even begin. It starts with an H-U-I-X, and you can look it up, and that's about as far as I'm going to go. And the Norsemen, they believe, the Vikings, the Norsemen, believed that salt was introduced to the sea by the works of the gods. Small letter G, gods. The Hindus believed offering salt to the gods would grant them good health. Lot's wife was turned into a pillar of salt. I don't have any idea the implications of what that means. I've been taught that from childhood up, that it was because she didn't believe, but I disobeyed. And I'm not really sure what the implications of that mean. It happened to be a woman, that whole aspect, salt, wisdom is she, I don't know. I haven't contemplated on the idea of why, what are the spiritual implications of that. Obviously, there are some, and I don't know what they are. Does anybody have any idea what that might mean?
Well, there are lots of pillars around the Dead Sea that kind of look like humans. They took the shape, according to what I was taught in archaeology, they made a myth around why this shape looked like a woman. However, the implication is, you got to obey God. Now, the whole story kind of gets really icky in the next chapter, so I'll stop there.
But you have an answer, why salt? Why not stone?
Because it was the salt pillars were there.
Oh, the salt pillars were there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that is a little more information to what I didn't know. Again, I don't have any idea. The idea of city on a hill or a hill has been around for a long, long time. It's not recent a recent idea. We sometimes hold ideas idealistically, and when we go to implement them, it becomes very difficult. So we can have a spirit of an idea or have ideas in which we think are right, but implementing them in the world around us, when reality hits them, it is very difficult. Just look around. You can see that there's no shortage of ideas and thoughts, and the interplay of them becomes very, very difficult. One of the issues that I hold near and dear is healthcare, but I also know how hard it is to really come up with a perfect solution, if that's even possible. So I understand, idealistically, I hold that idea up, and I want good healthcare for everyone, including myself, but I also know it comes with a lot of problems. So there's one idea that you can have, but implementing it, again, it becomes very difficult. One of the things I wrote down, a couple of things I'll just throw here before I get into what I want to talk a little more about. Does peace come through violence? So if we have interplay of different ideas, does violence in the end bring us peace? It was an idea that I thought of as I was preparing. And I heard that quote in something that I was watching at the time. You know, when we try to implement different ideas, we all have different cities on the hill, the interplay of all this different stuff. How does that we end up violently destroying someone else's city on a hill in order to bring another layer, another city of the hill on top? That has been pretty much our history. An example that I'm going to give. So power becomes a sledgehammer or a wrecking ball to some extent in our history of the past, even throughout the Bible. The Yahweh, the God of Israel, who went in and destroyed a lot of people along the way in order to set up the Israelite community. There was a lot of destructions of what other people believed and thought in order to replace on top of it. I want to tell a story from a book that I read, One Nation Under God's, by Peter Manzo. It's an interesting book. It was about Columbus and a lot of, well, not only that, but it was in reference to this nation had a lot of influences from a lot of different people who believed differently. It wasn't a singular God idea that came to this country and developed in this country. We are a mismatch or a melting pot of a lot of different ideas. And before I get into the story, I learned that, obviously, most of us know that Columbus was not the first visitor to this country. I say visitor because this country wasn't discovered. It might have been revisited. That's how I see it. That's how the writer used the word that Columbus visited this country. And according to legend, we know about the Norsemen who came across, the Vikings who came across into Newfoundland. That was one aspect of it. But somewhere during the Spanish time before Columbus, about 300-500 years before Columbus, apparently the Muslim religion, now the way I understand it, peoples were understood not necessarily by nationality, but by religion a little more in the past than what they are now. So you were a Muslim, a Christian, or you were a Jewish person, you could be a Spanish Jew or what have you, but you weren't, you were more classified by your religion. And the way the myth goes was that they came up and took Spain. Now, I'm not a historian. Someone else, I know there's other people here who are more involved in history than I am, and they were called the Moors, and they came up and they took Spain, or that peninsula, and they, at that time, they had great power, and they supposedly they put some ships across the ocean, Atlantic Ocean, and came into South America and Central America, and they started spreading their Islamic faith. So it would have been Islam started on the world scene about 625, so around 1100, somewhere thereabouts, that this is supposed to happen. Some say it's just legend, some say it's not. I don't know. But they, as Columbus and some other people came in Columbus's writings, they referred to the churches that sat on top of the mounds, because there was a lot of mound worship in which they would build mounds and they would put a temple on top of it. And here again, the idea of a city on a hill, and then the whole civil, you know, the culture would be around this mound and around this temple. Well, they used the word mosque in the writings that they had. Now, some people say that Columbus also used the word mosque in that writing, in his writings, only because they claim that he didn't want to use church, because he was supposed to be the one who brought the Christian church to the Americas. So there's not a really clear understanding of exactly if this happened or not. But there was another voyage that went over into, a lot of these years get mixed in between my head and I can't keep it all straight. It was too much for me to keep straight. And so somewhere around Columbus time, there was another voyage that went over into the tip of Florida and over into the Gulf of Mexico. And 400 of the people, I think there were several ships, it was a disaster. And only four people survived. And this is when they supposedly found the Twin Cities and all this kind of stuff that goes on. And their account, again, substantiates the idea that there was a Muslim influence in it at that time. I found that to be interesting, just because it's interesting. You can do the research. Now, when Columbus, this is the story that I want to share about one destroying one's city on the hill in order to replace another city on the hill. When Columbus came over, there was people living in Cuba and Espanola. That's Caribbean type of whatever, down in that area. Because he didn't come to North America necessarily, he came more down into the Caribbean area, Cuba area. I think I'm correct, am I not? And he landed, and these people who lived there were, I don't know the name of it, it was a big long name, but I'm just going to use the chieftain's name. It was Tirano. And he had a lot of, they had a religion, they had a whole different, gods. They had a whole city on a hill that was in which they believed. And his prophets or shamans had prophesied only a few months before Columbus came, and that there was going to be people come there dressed in fine clothes, come to their island and overthrow their religious rites and massacre their children and make them slaves. So Taranto, that's as close as what I can say it, thought it was a prophecy pertaining to the Caribs, a rivaling tribe that would come over and torture them throughout history. But it turned out that it was Columbus that they were prophesying. Because when Columbus came over and his three wooden ships came into town, Tano, I think they call him, Tano welcomed Columbus with open arms, because he saw these men not as the rival tribe, but as visitors from heaven. And so he welcomed them to come in. But as it turned out, Columbus may have misinterpreted his words. It says, he thought Columbus says, come and see the men who have come from heaven, or from the heavens, is what Columbus thought they were saying. But there's a dispute as to whether or not they were actually saying that. But they were welcomed with open arms. But the problem was that Columbus, who was representing Spain, who was of a Christian faith, who came there to claim the New World for Spain and for profit, along with other things, to proselytize and what have you, saw these people as without any religion. And in Columbus' time, there was Jews, Christians, Muslims, and Mongols. And that was as far as Columbus, according to the book, that's what Columbus saw his spiritual reality as, this different type of people. And so Columbus questioned whether or not these people here, Tano's people, had any religious at all. And thus, if you didn't have no religion, you didn't have no souls. And thus, you were no human. And so that gave him the right, he thought, to wipe them out. And that's what he did. So in order to build a new city on the hill, he wiped out what was old and replaced the new. That has been happening time and time and time again throughout history. That has happened. Columbus, as I read, thought he was a messianic figure. He thought he was fulfilling the prophecy of Isaiah. And how can I say that all of this is bad or good? I'm not saying it's bad or good. It's what happens. It's really what happens in this world today. John Winthrop, who you heard of last week, came across with about 1,000 Puritans, and he spoke of the new city on the hill also. He came after Columbus. There's many people who use the whole idea of the city on the hill. His idea of the city on the hill, he was a religious Puritan way of thinking. It was a particular denomination, a particular way of thinking, and he was setting forth to develop this new city on the hill, and he went as far as to say if they didn't obey God, that they would become tread underneath and they would be heard no more. Well, that's pretty much what happened to some extent. He lived, his idea of the city of the hill lived for some time. And then it was gone. What what can we take from this? Throughout many throughout the years, many presidents have used the idea of the city on a hill. Lincoln, I think, was one when he left Springfield, was one. Robert Kennedy was another. I think Reagan was another. I think one of the Bushes did, and President Obama did. And there's even some people who say that the present president has used it at some time. The ones that I've read that I consider that I like a lot more than others is Lincoln and John F. Kennedy's and President Obama's. They were more inclusive than the rest of them. It depends on what you want to consider to be a city on the hill. Our nation is changing rapidly, whether we like it or not. What is the new city of the hill going to look like? If we are to be the light of the world, what is it going to look like? Surely somewhere somebody must have a comment. But what will it look like? Jesus says that in my Father's house there are many mansions, and I go to prepare this place for you. So isn't the city on the hill, God's city on the hill, full of different ideas and places in which people can live? Do we all have to think the same? I usually try to center myself around the way I come up with ideas that I accept as to being true is what I think, I try to anyway, model it around what Jesus said, the summation of the law, that to love God with all my heart and my soul and to love my neighbor as myself. And if I can build my theology, my hill around that, then I feel I am on solid ground. I am on a much better solid ground. Sadly, even within the Christian church, we don't agree on many things. Each one wants to be the city on the hill and outshine everybody else. This is a problem. It's a serious problem. I can't, you know, really underline it. This week I heard that one of the evangelical channels of some sort, I'm not sure, I'm not going to name any of them, said that it was God's will to have Trump, President Trump, in there at this time in order to protect Israel. That opened up a lot of that opened up a lot of theological angles and theological twists that, yes, Dan.
If it's up to him to decide who's on the hill, just be him up there. There won't be no Christian fired up, and he'll just be there.
Well, I tend to agree with that somewhat. The problem is we're so far divided politically, we don't know which ones, you know, we're scrapping over on who's going to be up on the hill. Now, see, we use the term going up on the hill as Congress, too, going up on the hill. So the metaphor language that is used along the way is very dense. Can we create a new nation or as different races in this country and different sexes, male and female, and the GBLT community are given voice in this new city on the hill? What is it going to look like? Representative Omar and Cortez seem to be voicing their opinion quite readily. They want to have a new type of city on the hill. They want to add to what is the city on the hill. How is this all going to play out? We don't know. I wouldn't venture to even guess. We are constantly changing. The city on the hill has been constantly changing over the years. But I think As each one of us has a light, and each one of us supports an idea and gives light to that idea, can't we bring our lights together somewhat? Let's hope. Let's hope. Without that, we're just going to destroy ourselves. I don't see any other way around it. I wonder sometimes, I'm closing up here, I wonder sometimes, ideas live on as we pass away. New people take hold of them ideas and live on. And accept them and grab them and give life to them ideas again. I wonder, what will the new city on the hill look like? What can we add to that? I'll say one more thing. We in this church give to the fourth Sunday supper to the community as a light to the world. We are, that part of that is our city on the hill in which we give to the community. We're doing that today. There's many people who devote time, money, and efforts. This is part of our city on the hill in which we give light. Many people working together give light to this idea. May God bless us. Bye.